Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to this edition of A Climate Hawk's Companion. Anyway, today is February 19th, 2017, and was the day of the Science March in Boston, down in Copley Square. I got a chance to go down there and catch some sound, so I wanted to put it up for your consideration. So this is the speakers program at the Climate March in downtown Boston. I was not able to include everyone, all good speakers, but here's a selection. Have fun.
That we're here because science serves the common good. It protects the health of our communities, the safety of our families, our children's education. It's the foundation of our economy. It creates jobs and the future we all want to live in and preserve for coming generations. Scientists are real life superheroes. They solve problems, and they protect the people and places we love. Healthcare, climate science, research on lead levels and water quality all protect people. The kinds of science and evidence-based policies that are most at risk are those that serve the public. These attacks on science are attacks on our families, our communities, and our collective future. Science involves the relentless pursuit of truth beyond the limits of the known. We're gathering here on the occasion of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS's annual meeting, which has brought thousands of scientists to town here in Boston. I want to lift up what AAAS President Barbara Shull said in her address a couple nights ago. Scientists speak truth to power. This practice is fundamental to our collective well-being. It is not partisan, it is patriotic. But it's under attack, because science itself and the unalienable rights that scientists protect and uphold. From the muzzling of scientists and government agencies, to the immigration ban, the deletion of scientific data, the defunding of public science, the erosion of our institutions of science is a dangerous direction for our country. Real people, real communities bear the brunt of the impacts of these actions. So this is about freedom of inquiry and the future of evidence-based policy in the public interest. It's about the disproportionate impact on communities of color and low-income communities. And it's about the impacts of the discriminatory travel ban. And it's about speaking truth to power. So thank you to everyone for coming here to do that. Our next speaker is Naomi Oreskes. She's a professor of the history of science at Harvard University and author of Merchants of Doubt.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for being here today. This is really an important moment, and it means a lot that all of you are here. I have three things I want to say to you and to anyone who might be listening at home. And the first and most important is that we don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. As scientists, as scholars, as academics, as researchers, we want to be doing science. We want to be in our labs. We want to be out in the field. We want to be writing our papers and teaching our students, and of course, getting funding for our next research project. We want to do the work that we were trained to do, the work that we love. But we're here because our science, our work, is under attack. And we have realized that we can no longer sit on the sidelines assuming that someone else will protect us, that someone else will do the work. Thank you. That someone else will do the work of protecting the integrity of American science. And we have come to realize and understand that science, like anything of value, needs nurturing and protection. Now, attacks on science are not new. I've been tracking them for quite a few years, but they have taken an alarming turn in recent weeks. And so my second point that I want to stress is that it's not political to defend the integrity of facts. Some of you may have hesitated to come here today. I hesitated to come here today. We all have colleagues who didn't come because they didn't want to be political. And there have been many conversations in the scientific community in the last few weeks about whether a rally is the right response. So I think it's really crucial for us to be clear why we are here. We did not politicize our science. We did not start this fight. Our science has been politicized by people who are motivated to reject facts because those facts conflict with their worldview, their political beliefs, or their economic self-interest. Yeah. For the people who aren't here, for our colleagues who didn't come today, and make this point. If a group of men came into your home and started to attack your family and threatened to burn down your house, would you stand up to them? Of course you would. And no one would consider it political. They would consider it self-defense and common sense. And this is the situation we feel now, we are in now. People in positions of power and authority who have attacked our colleagues are now threatening to burn down our house. And it's not because we have done anything wrong. Now, I'm a founding member of the board of the Climate Science Legal Defense Fund, and I can tell you this unequivocally. Our colleagues who have been attacked have not been attacked because they did something wrong. They have been attacked because they did something right. And that's something for science. For our lives and our communities and for public health. Now, some of you may feel that the best thing to do now is to lay low. And if you work for a federal agency, you may need to do that. But I can tell you both from personal experience and from the lessons of history that laying low will not protect you from attack, not if you do important work. And why would you not want to do important work? So the key thing for all of us now is to stand together, to be prepared to defend our colleagues if and when they need to be defended, and not to fall into the fallacy of thinking that they somehow brought this on themselves. As the great founding father and scientist Benjamin Franklin memorably put it, we must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly, we will hang separately. Thank you. And that brings me to my final point, which is about science and democracy. I'm a historian of science, and a scientist. And one thing I know, and all historians know, is that this nation was founded by men like Franklin, who not only believed in science, and in some cases did science, but believed that science and democracy were inextricably linked. They believed that what they were doing in founding this great nation was an experiment that would have to be revised in light of experience and observation. But they also believed that this great experiment would work, that America would thrive, because of the power of reason and evidence to shape people's thinking and enable them to revise their views and continue to progress. As Thomas Jefferson famously wrote in 1804, no experiment could be more interesting than that which we are now trying, and which we trust will end in establishing the fact that man may be governed by reason and truth. So I want to conclude by saying it is not political to defend your colleagues, it is not political to defend your home, it is not political to stand up for science. It may be political to defend the concept of a democracy composed of citizens governed by reason and truth, but if it is, that's a politics that I, for one, am proud to embrace. Thank you very much.
I want to turn the mic over to Jacqueline Gill. She's a PhD, an assistant professor of paleoecology at the University of Maine, and a host of the Warm Regards podcast.
But I didn't want to just do science for myself. I wanted to do science for everyone. Growing up in a working class family in rural America, I've had first-hand encounters with why science matters to the health of our families, to our clean air and water, and to our industry and our infrastructure. I really believe that science for everyone is one of America's best ideas. It's research that's largely funded by taxpayers and not corporate interests. It's transparent. It's broadly communicated and not locked behind a paywall. It's mandated to be in the national interest. So when science is for everyone, it has direct benefits to public health, to our economy, and in creating a culture and fostering a culture of innovation, discovery, and one that values education. So when our new director of the Environmental Protection Agency took to Twitter this week, one of the first things that he did was to pledge to work with stakeholders. Specifically, he mentioned industry, farmers, ranchers, and business owners. But he left someone out. He left out the largest group of stakeholders in our country. All of us.
Yeah.
Right? Woo! Standing up for science for everyone means standing up for those who stand to lose the most when our scientific institutions come under attack. And I'm going to tell you a secret. It's not us. Right? Those people who have the most to lose, it's not the scientists. If all the climate change funding were dried up tomorrow, I'd be devastated, but I would have other things to do. My lab would survive. I have so many questions about our incredible planet, it would take 1,000 lifetimes to even get close to solving them. So while standing up for science means supporting that funding and our scientific institutions that do that research, what it really means is standing up for all of us, because we are all the ones, you are all the ones who stand to gain or lose the most when those institutions come under attack. Standing up for science for everyone breaks down barriers and gives everyone a chance to benefit from and contribute to our discoveries. Standing up for science may feel scary. These intersections between policy, politics, and science may feel new, but they are not new. The outcomes of our research have always extended beyond the lab, the field, and the conference room. Our work has implications to the environment, to public health, to civil rights, to economics, education, national defense. Science has always been political, at the risk of contradicting Naomi Oreskes. And I believe that science being political is a feature, not a bug. Because the intersections between science and politics are what make our research relevant and what make it known. But just because science is political does not mean that it's partisan.
Yeah.
Science is for everyone. It transcends boundaries and barriers. It revitalizes our communities, even as it energizes our research and gives it meaning. So when you stand up for science, when we stand up for science, remember who you're standing up for. We are people with heartbeats. And when science is strong, we all thrive together. Thank you.
Thank you, Jacqueline. I'm hearing from people that they're having trouble hearing. And I think that's because our sound system is good for a crowd size of about 1,000, but we have several thousand people here today. And I would love to hear what it sounds like for several thousand scientists and supporters to chant "Stand Up for Science." Let's do it. What do you say? Stand up for science.
Stand up for science. Stand up for science. Stand up for science. Stand up for science. Stand up for science. Stand up for science. Stand up for science. Stand up for science. Stand up for science. Stand up for science.
That is amazing.
Stand up for science.
I'm really honored to introduce her, is Chiamaka Obilo. She's a high school student and a fellow at the the Alliance for Climate Education, and she has a message from and for the future. Hello?
Hello!
Hi everyone, I'm Chia Makuabilo. You can call me Chia. I'm 17, a senior at Boston Latin Academy, and the Alliance for Climate Education Action Center. So, first I want to tell you a little bit about ACE, that's what we call it. ACE is a national organization dedicated to educating youth about the science about climate change. But we also want to empower them to take action, which is exactly what I'm doing. So, I want you guys to take a few steps in my shoes. Are you ready?
Yeah!
Okay. Try to remember the end of your eighth grade year. It's sunny outside. You're happy. And even greater, in a few months, you'll finally be in high school. Life just couldn't get any better, right? Well, at least that's what you thought. You actually have severe scoliosis. And on this particular day of July, you're walking outside of the hospital after recovering from 10-hour correction surgery. You relearn how to walk, how to sit, how to get dressed, and even how to use a bathroom. Sure, you're having some back spasms, lost a lot of weight, and you suddenly grew from 5'3 to 5'8. But with the metal rods in your spine, no one can deny that you're now a bionic human. As you marvel at your new height and your new posture, you step outside, you breathe in, expecting to inhale your first breath of fresh air in a while, but what enters is exhaust fumes and construction dust. A year later, when I tested my lung capacity, it was less than half of what is considered normal. And I wondered, how it might be different if my recovering body could breathe in clean air. I was compelled to fight climate change because I realized it negatively affected the most delicate aspect of my being, my health. Burning fossil fuels is the number one cause of air pollution and the main driver of climate change, and hot weather makes air pollution worse. Understanding this connection inspired me to become a climate activist. I realize that this knowledge is empowering for my generation and that it must be shared. Yeah. I am fortunate, in fact, lucky, to have encountered the science behind climate change, but learning such an important truth should not be a matter of luck. As I stand before you, an aspiring scientist, I urge you to expand the boundaries of your mission to include education. The effects of climate change will transcend generations, and my generation must be equipped to confront this challenge. When misleading alternative facts are being presented by our highest form of government, we cannot expect science to stand alone. If powerful interests choose to hide the truth about climate change, we must go directly to the people. The beauty and the gospel of science should flow beyond the walls of research facilities and into the bounds of community centers, hospital waiting rooms, and social media. We must invest in the scientific education of our younger generation, especially in public schools across the country. We must launch large-scale campaigns to ally with the youth, go door to door, spreading the truth. And in this new era of activism, we must make our voices heard and make our presence, along with the facts, visible to the citizens of the world. Our work does not stop there. It is necessary that we ally with movements like Black Lives Matter. Because we cannot ignore the fact that climate change is as much a social justice issue as it is a scientific one. Disproportionately affected by climate change and pollution. Even I noticed that when I realized that half of my elementary school classmates had asthma. Given the recent turn of events, I ask that the scientific community does not despair, but that it is invigorated to empower citizens and non-citizens alike to take action on this dire cause. The good news of science is not exclusive to the elite, and thus its message must permeate throughout the masses and empower everyone, from the youth to the elderly. If there is one thing that you take from the speech today, I hope it's an understanding that despite our great strides in research, our biggest fight is for the minds of the citizens of the world and the next generation. Thank you.
Yes. I want to introduce Jeffrey Supren, who's a PhD in energy modeling postdoctoral associate at MIT and a science history postdoctoral fellow at Harvard University.
You look beautiful. I started doing renewable energy research when I was 16 years old. I've always believed in the power of science to make the world a better place. But 4 years ago, halfway through my PhD, researching how to make a better solar cell, a brighter LED, just in our lab at MIT across the river, my friends and I came to a startling realization. We realized we already have the technologies we need to start tackling the climate change crisis. What we lack is the political will. The will to put a price on carbon. The will to subsidize renewables over fossil fuels. The will to stand up to big oil, to its lobbying, its disinformation, its drill baby drill culture that is incompatible with the science of stopping climate change. But what the heck could we do about it? We're a bunch of science students. Frankly, advocacy and activism don't come easily to most of us, scientists and engineers. But gradually, we felt we really had no choice but to step out of our comfort zone. It's our science and our future that is on the line. So bit by bit, our very improbable group of MIT students came together. I think a lot of them are here today. We researched and outreached, petitioned and negotiated, rallied and protested. For 116 days, we sat in, outside our president's office, willing MIT to act. And although we didn't always win, gradually the mountain began to move. We for the first time, put climate change on the Institute's agenda. For the first time, we got MIT to launch a climate action plan. And most importantly, for the first time, we were part of a global movement reframing the climate narrative at the highest levels. These last few years, I've learned that sometimes sitting on the sidelines is just not good enough. Yeah. I've learned that sometimes, in the words of Albert Einstein, remember, a refugee to this country, those who have the privilege to know have the duty to act. And in acting, I've learned that sometimes the only thing powerful enough to take on the status quo is the power of a social movement. Yeah. The other thing I've learned is that I'm not alone. I've learned that so many are with me in believing that attacks on science are not just attacks that hurt us scientists. They hurt our ability to protect the American people, to serve the common good. I see that belief all around. I see that belief this week in the EPA workers who risked their jobs to stand up to Scott Pruitt as the new head of the EPA. I see that belief in the Harvard professor, who I guarantee you has not one political bone in his body, who turned up a few weeks ago and told his students, "I don't usually say this sort of thing, but now is the time for activism." Do your best work as a scientist and your best activism as a citizen. And I see that belief in the millions who will be marching in April for science. Most of all, I see that belief right here in all of you. The nerdiest crowd I've ever seen. Thank you to the scientists, the students, the other academics for leaving the safety of the conference down the street and standing with us today. Thank you to the citizen scientists, all of you, for standing alongside us. Science is an idea. An idea that's lit the world for centuries. An idea that brings us here together today. An idea that stands on the shoulders of giants. Apparently I said something wrong. But now the legacy of those giants is under attack by an anti-science administration that is risking the people and places I love, we love, by putting ideology before facts. That legacy is under attack by a president who picked an EPA-suing climate denier to head the EPA. A president who made Exxon CEO America's Secretary of State and diplomat on climate change. A president who rubber-stamps oil pipelines to hell with indigenous rights. A president who has called climate change bullshit. But today, science fights back. Never forget, scientists are among the most trusted people in America. Never forget, you and I, we wield a megaphone to public and political opinion. All we have to do is choose to use it. Never forget that in science, we are constantly seeking the hardest, most important problems to solve. And I've got good news for you, because this is the mother of all problems. So let's do what we do best. Let's get organized. Let's get creative. Let's experiment. Let's show up not just to the Science March on April 22nd, not just to the People's Climate March on April 29th, not just to the next big event after that, but to all the other less glamorous times in between that together turn this moment into a movement. Let's share our stories with the public. Let's get our friends, our colleagues, our families involved. Let's engage working with the media. Let's send a message to our politicians that policy without science is a recipe for disaster. And if they don't get it, let's run for office and vote them out. Most of all, and finally, let's send a message to Mr. Trump today. America runs on science. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Climate Hawks Companion.